Welcome to the Three History Nymphs podcast. Join us for unusual, thought-provoking, and hilarious perspectives on all things historical.
By the Three History Nymphs. This week, we're going to tackle one of those subjects that you either love or you hate, Mary Stuart, Mary Queen of Scots. Joining me tonight is Miss Amy.
Hello.
And Miss Holly.
Hey.
And I'm going to let Holly take this one tonight because I think she has a bit of an announcement to go along with this.
Ooh.
So I am particularly excited to talk about Mary, Queen of Scots, mainly because I have decided to write a book on her.
Yay!
We all know, I did announce be writing a book on Catherine Grey. However, Mary has hit me like a ton of bricks, to say the least. and I always planned to write a book on Mary. She just got put back a little bit for many reasons. But anyway, she's come back around and I could not be more thrilled to be in the midst of writing a book about such a wonderful woman. She is another one of my heroines. I think whether you love or hate her, she is someone that is very well known. I think she... Even if you don't know the history completely, I think you know, you at least know her name, you at least know she was Queen of Scotland, you know the very basic details. She's a very, very well-known person throughout history. I think one of my main points with Mary, and it kind of mirrors a bit of the way I felt about Anne as well, is people get bogged down on her... let's say bad qualities. People get bogged down by the things she did wrong or the places she was lacking. What we don't actually tend to look at is you've got a young girl who was just 6 days old when her father died. She was 6 days old when she became queen. You know, she was coronated less than a year old, and then moved to a different country, you know, all these different things. And I don't think we really look at this young girl who actually went through a hell of a lot in a very short space of time building up to her execution. Kathy?
The thing about Mary, Queen of Scots, and I'm going to refer to her as Mary Stuart, because in my mind, that's who she is. She's an individual. She's a woman who faced more than even, I'd like to compare her to Elizabeth I, in that they both struggled. They both fought for the throne. They fought for their lives, basically. And interestingly enough, obviously, it comes down to Elizabeth I and Mary, Queen of Scots. But I think if you look at Mary Stuart, and the reason why I'm thrilled that Holly's doing this book is because Mary, Queen of Scots has so much to tell us that I don't think she has told us yet. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of people shy away from this kind of discussion because, you know, it's not a black and white fact. Well, life is not a black and white fact. You know, if you think about this poor child being sent to France at five, betrothed to a dauphin, finally marries him, he dies. She has to come back to Scotland. Everybody's against her. It's just she fought with every inch of her body and her soul. And I'm just thrilled that Holly's doing this book on her.
Yeah.
And just to go back to that, you know, you said about the Dauphin, she was widowed then at 18. Whether there's a lot of controversy over whether there was a lot of love in their relationship, you know, no one really fully knows. I personally believe there was. I personally believe they must have had a bond with each other. Now, she moved to France when she was five. They were young children. They grew up together. Whether they had romantic feelings or whether they had a childhood bond, you know, there was a deep-seated bond there. So to lose someone so close to her heart at such a young age, I mean, God knows what that must have done to her. It's absolutely atrocious. And I agree with what Kathy said there in the fact that Mary's got a lot more to say. Now, I will say one thing. I am writing this book much in the same way I wrote Anne, and that will be in Mary's voice. And I do agree. I do believe there's a lot about Mary that I believe if she could say in her own words, she would, and she'd love to put the record straight herself. That's really where I'm going with this.
I'm curious what I know I've heard a lot of what people presume were her faults, but what do you guys think were her faults? Because to be honest with you, I don't think there was a lot in her control, and I think a lot of things were made to be presented differently than how they happened. So I'm curious as to what you guys think.
Holly? I think she was hot-headed to a certain extent, you know, and she
Scots are.
I believe she was ruled a lot by her heart, and I kind of get this image of, whether I'm wrong or right, of, well, I want to do this, so I'm going to do this. You know, I'm queen, I've decided to do this, especially with the, you know, there's the Darnley situation, and then later again, the Bothwell situation of, well, I want to marry him, so I'm going to. Again, it's not as black and white as that. There is a lot more to the Bothwell situation.
And when you think about that, it's not really different than how Elizabeth reigned, too, because... I mean, think of how similar those two women were, but one was perceived as having faults and the other one not so much.
Well, Elizabeth was headstrong, you see, where Elizabeth fought before she did anything. Elizabeth was constantly having to be one step ahead of the game. And I believe that's how she ruled. She was always very intelligent. She always had to watch her back. And I think that's where they ruled in two different ways.
That makes sense.
I think another thing that really is challenging when you look at the two of them, and I know that's not what we're talking about tonight, but is their religious differences. One is somewhat old world and one is somewhat new world. They were both phenomenal, amazing, crazy making women. I don't think that anybody could dispute that. But I have to tell you, as much as I love Anne Boleyn and I love her daughter Elizabeth, there is something about Mary Stuart that is so compelling because she never, ever got a chance. She never had a level playing ground at all, ever.
No.
And I think that we are quick to point out that she, you know, she ruled from her heart. I'm not so sure that that's true because I'm not sure she had options. Holly, am I off base?
No, I don't think you are. But also what I was going to say, I mean, because I know we're only briefly touching on the Elizabeth Mary situation was, how, you know, people always kind of pit these two against each other. But I see it more as the people surrounding Elizabeth.
Yes,
I agree.
I agree with that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I would say that. Go ahead.
Sorry, no, I was going to say yes. I think Elizabeth would have been slightly fearful of her. You know, of course, it was scary. She had an amazing claim to the throne. As we've discussed before, Tudors were never completely safe. Mm. However, I think I am of the opinion she was pushed to sign that death warrant. You know, so I don't think we can necessarily pit these two against each other in the way a lot of literature and a lot of pop culture does, Kathy.
I think that there's something really incredibly different about the two of them. One is, in a nutshell, Elizabeth had the benefit of a privy council of men around her who were supportive.
Yep.
Okay, they may not have been thrilled to death to have another female queen, okay? And they may have taken exception with her on things. But for the whole, Cecil, Walsingham, you know, Dudley, all of them supported her and did everything they could. Now let's flip it. And Mary goes to Scotland. And I mean, there is no one. Her half-brother is trying to cut her throat. I mean, it's a dreadful situation. So Elizabeth had a benefit that Mary did not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'd like to touch on the fact of, when she goes to Scotland, and that is, I think, when things change for her. She's a queen who yes, she's been a ruler of her country. She, you know, she's been a figurehead, but she hasn't truly been a queen. She hasn't lived in the country she is meant to rule since she was 5 years old. She's now going back as an 18-year-old widow. And she's going back to a country that I feel she would have expected to have welcomed her with open arms. And she's actually gone back to quite a cold reception. You know, things in Scotland aren't great. There's a massive divide between the Protestants and the Catholics. Mary herself is Catholic. I must admit, one of the things I love about Mary is she hasn't gone back and tried to force anyone's hand. She's, right. You know, she's more than happy to allow Protestants and Catholic to live side by side. Of course, neither party is necessarily happy with that. But she's gone back to a country that's been ruled by regents for the past 18 years. And I think it is quite a cold, unforgiving place.
And it's a place she's not used to. She's not been there.
She's not welcome. Yeah. No.
She doesn't, you know, she's used to the French court, you know, and I'd be hard pressed to compare favorably the French court and the Scottish court.
Exactly.
I mean, it's worlds apart. And so that was alien. The land was alien. The weather was alien. Everything was alien to Mary Stuart when she stepped back into Scotland and she had no one. And what she did do is remarkable in light of what she had to do to get there.
Yeah, she dug her heels in with, you know, she was kind of given lemons and she tried very hard to make lemonade with what she was given. So, you know.
And I think the thing, you know, we do have to think it was a hard time for women.
And I think that's what gets missed is that we always have to remember, she was queen, she was royal, but that didn't mean that it made it any less harder for a woman to still dig her feet in, you know?
It simply meant that, you know, quite simply put, it meant that she had to fight harder.
Exactly.
Even though she, you know, her God-given right, let's say, was to be queen, she had to fight harder to gain the respect of her people because the fact was that Scotland wasn't even meant to have a female ruler. It was not meant to happen. But she was the only heir at the end of the day, and that's what it boiled down to. So, and I think we do really, when we're talking about these female rulers, we do really need to take into account that their sex was a very big pitfall for them.
Well, I think if anything, it probably put a larger target on their backs because they were in a
hugely
position of power. What man isn't going to want to knock that right off and claim it as his own in those days? And a bigger target.
Look at John Knox. John Knox took advantage of that.
Awful.
Can we think of a much more awful man? He was horrible. No. And he called her all the names under the sun and he preached against her and he hated the fact she was a female ruler. Case in point there.
Think of how imposing she was, though. I mean, beautiful, as they say. And she was, I looked it up, she was almost 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
That's a tall woman. That's taller than probably most men in her court at that time. Think about that.
Well, so exactly.
That's imposing as well.
And I think one of the appeals about Darnley, I believe, I'd have to double check this, but I'm pretty sure that Darnley himself was quite a tall man. I have got his height in my note, and I think that was one of the appeals to him when they met each other.
Yeah. That makes sense. Now, do you think that was a love match? How do you think that played out?
I'm going to let Kathy take this one first, I think.
I, you know, I'm always looking around the corner for the conspiracy. You know that, but
you and me both.
when I look back on this, and to be fair, when we come on and we do the podcast, it's not because we just read Wikipedia. We do actually put work into this and we do research. And 9 times out of 10, it's a subject that we already know a lot about because it's something that we love. Mm-hmm. So I'm not just coming to this Darnley story, you know, as of today. I've long held that it was not, that I believe that in the beginning that Mary Stuart fell in love with Henry Darnley. I do believe that. And I believe that he was, I'm going to use the word chameleon rather than schizophrenic because I'm not absolutely sure, but I do believe that he was a chameleon, that he tricked her, that he wooed her, he made her happy, all with the intention, and this goes back to Elizabeth's court and his family, that he would become the king of Scotland. I think he believed this. And then when she got pregnant and showed absolutely no idea whatsoever, no inclination to make him king, and now she's pregnant with the heir, I believe that Henry Lord Darnley became the devil in disguise, and I believe that he did everything he possibly could to hurt her.
Colin? He was 6'3", by the way. I just looked it up. 6'3".
I thought so, yeah.
Very tall.
So I'm going to be completely honest here. last week, we tried recording this particular podcast. At that time, I had, let's say, a soft spot for Darnley. You know, I thought him a certain way. I didn't think
you
him that
loved
bad.
Him.
Yeah. So and then we, you know, for whatever reason, the podcast didn't work. We had technical issues, etc. You know, all those sorts of things. I went away. Before leading up to that, I'd done a lot of research on Darnley. Not enough apparently, because I've gone back after this and I've researched Darnley even more. And hate seems like a strong word.
Welcome to the other side.
And that, it's just absolutely flipped me. This man was
not a nice man.
A disgrace. I'm sorry. It's really, you know, it's awful to talk about these long dead people in such a way.
See, I don't think so. I mean, if you were a jerk when you were alive, I'm going to say, hey, I'm sorry you're dead, but you're still a jerk.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
The thing he did, I mean, for a moment, let's just talk about Rizzio.
Oh.
Really?
Is that
possibly one of the most heartbreaking things I have sat down and read? And I've written it myself in a book. I've written that particular situation. You two have read it. It broke my heart to write it. It's broke my heart to read about it. It was absolutely disgusting. It was calculated. It was planned out to a T. He knew what he was doing. All to hurt this 6-month pregnant woman.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of a more calculating man who has waited specifically for his woman to be his wife to be 6 months pregnant so that he can kill one of her closest friends in front of her?
That was probably one of the scenes that I have to say in the movie, if anyone has seen Mary Queen of Scots, which has its pros and cons, that scene was heart-wrenching. And now, Holly, do you think that they got Darnley pretty spot on, especially in that scene? I mean, there was no reason to take out Rizzio. No reason.
So here's my issue. Okay. In that scene, they got him spot on. They showed him as a coward. You know, he wanted that to happen, but in the moment, he cowered behind other men. Mm-hmm. I honestly believe they got him spot on in that scene. I believe they got... It's hard because there is half of me that wants to say, I think they went for someone particularly good looking, you know, and they kind of Hollywooded him up a bit. However, he would have been good looking and he would have been charming, mm-hmm. you know, and he would have appeared to Mary like this charming, beautiful young man.
Knight in shining armor. Yeah.
You know, she would have fallen and when you say the love thing, I'm not sure if I would say fallen in love with him. So I think with Darnley, it was definitely more lust. I think with Frances, she had quite a sweet, quite an innocent childhood love. And I think then she's seen Darnley, who is a man, you know, and I mean a man rather than a boy.
Manly man.
Yeah, and she's been like, ooh, you know, I want a bit of that, kind of. I don't, that sounds gross. I didn't mean it to sound so, but, you know, she's like, oh, okay, you know.
No, I felt that way about her brother when he came on the screen in the movie. He's got a great smoky eye look, so,
you know. He's got a smoky eye than I do.
I can't nail that. And the headband was perfect. Whatever. Anyways.
Is this a good time to mention that Henry Cavill is following us on Twitter?
Oh, yay. Yeah, because I know I have to get him in. By the way, Henry Cavill, if you are the real Henry Cavill, thanks, boyfriend.
I mean, if follow as well, that's, you know, I know it's nothing to do with history, but he'd make a good historical figure. He could, if my book gets made into a film, he can play Francis.
Thank you. Oh. Yes. Yes. Now, if you want me to play Mary Queen of Scots because I'm Scottish, you know, I'm fine with that.
I really like the guy that played Francis Green.
I like that. I like it.
Toby Regbo.
Oh, I did like him.
I love him.
He was so precious.
He's a great Francis. Yeah. That's what I mean. And I look at him and I see this sweet, like, and I think Francis would have been a lot like that. This sweet, caring, very gentle kind of person.
Yeah. I mean, and now, so we might as well now hit Bothwell, because my take on Bothwell is I don't think she went into that willingly.
No, I don't.
I don't. I think that was coerced. And ultimately ended up being her downfall because everyone thought it was so terrible rushing into that marriage. I don't think she had anything to do with Darnley's into lot of questions about Bothwell, which ultimately I think was her undoing. The third marriage that happened a little too quickly after the murder, quote unquote, of Darnley. My thoughts are she did not go into that marriage willingly. What do you guys think?
Do you know what? And me and Kathy kind of spoke about this last week. I do want to do a little bit more research on Bothwell. Personally, I am of the opinion that actually Darnley was more of a monster than Bothwell was. I mean,
I think that too on some level.
What makes you say that? I'm curious.
It's hard to really put a finger on it. When you read about Darnley and you see the things that happened, the in-depth stuff, like when he, you know, partnered up with Moray and things like this, when you get a sense of Darnley, you get a real sense of evil, or I do. I get a real sense of evil. Yeah. You know, that this guy was no good from the get-go. And I think even in the movie Mary Queen of Scots, they did try to go there with the beginning of it, that he was not a good guy. I don't think that Bothwell had as much, they make him out to be this rapist kind of, you know, caveman dragging her off type of situation. And I'm sure that she went under duress, but I'm pretty sure, I feel like he was trying to save her on some level.
Because he was protecting her up until that point.
You've got to think she was backed into a corner by this point. Mm. She didn't have a lot of options. It was widely believed.
Well, I think
believed,
that's what I mean, too. You know, like, yeah. She may not willingly have gone into it, but
to this day, it's quite a popular belief that actually she may have had something to do with Darnley's death. No matter how the people of the time felt about Darnley, they weren't going to take to that well. You've got to remember, Darnley was a Stuart as well.
Right.
He was English. Yep.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're all Tudors and Woodvilles and Yorks and, you know, it's a whole thing. That's all of them. But I just, you know, my feeling on this really, Bothwell, really, what did he have to gain? Because she was already being deposed. Okay, she had already at
she
that
was being
point,
forced to abdicate at that point.
She had signed, hadn't she already, at one point she signed away her rights. And the only thing that stops me from fully embracing Bothwell is that when she went to England, he did not go with her.
That's what I'm saying. And he ended up dying crazy in a Denmark prison, I believe, in the end.
So there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of Bothwell to uncover yet, I think. But I do, yeah. I definitely, I think she had, I think he was better to her than Darnley. I think anybody would have been better to her than Darnley, to be honest with you.
And, you know, back then there's all these accusations of rape from all ends as well. Right. So, I mean, that was such a frequent thing back then, and it doesn't make it okay.
No,
but no. Also,
she miscarried twins by Bothwell too.
It's possible. It is possible. She miscarried twins. But you know, again, it's one of those mysteries that we may not know 100% factual.
It's sad. It's sad what she, I mean, it, when you look at it all, and then you know, we can just skip right ahead. Of course, she goes to England and she's imprisoned for what, 18 or 19?
19 years
by Elizabeth and ultimately beheaded. Okay, that's, you know, there's no question that the way that she was treated in England was a direct result of Elizabeth's Privy Council. Maybe not so much Elizabeth, but they did it with her blessing.
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, that wasn't a good move either. But at that point, she had nothing. What was she going to do?
What was she going to lose at that point? You know, I mean, at that point, throw caution to the wind. And, you know, if it, you know, sounds like a duck, looks like a duck, and maybe it works out, great. But, her story is just a very sad story, because I would like to say, I think she could have been the best of both worlds. She could have ruled with her head and her heart, because I think you do need somewhat of a heart to rule, to take care of your people. And it just seems like, you know, Mary was all heart and emotion, where Elizabeth was more the head and always being a, you know, had to be a step ahead. And if they could have smashed the two of them together, ultimate female ruler, I believe.
On the flip side of that, we said this earlier, Mary rules with her heart, but she must have had to have been a very intelligent woman.
Without a doubt, the minute she was
born, she was raised to be a queen. She must have had, you know, a great grasp on what she was doing. So I don't think we can rule out her intelligence either.
And I think there's one other thing that keeps bothering me, is that at no point did Mary Stuart ever approach Elizabeth with the idea that Mary Stuart should take the throne. She wanted her named as successor, and if not her, her son.
And so, you know what, I agree with you on that, because in the movie she makes a comment of, if you murder me, you murder your queen. And one, they never met in real life. Two, she never would have disrespected Elizabeth to her face like that, period.
I don't think she ever had any intention.
No, I agree.
I really don't. All right. She may have had intentions of ruling England, but not in Elizabeth's place.
And I think she
wanted to safeguard her son too.
And since they are the same age, or, you know, roughly the same age, it stands to reason that Mary Queen of Scots would have known that she would, the odds were 50-50 that she would outlive Elizabeth. There really wasn't this coup. Even though Walsingham and Burley and all them wanted to make it a coup, you know, she sent out letters in a beer bottle or beer cask or something like that. That was the Babington plot. I mean, it's all so vague, and it all seems so manipulated.
It's really vague, very well planned. And we have to remember, Walsingham had his double agent in there that was able to implicate her. We don't know for sure that she actually did this. And even if she did, she's been imprisoned for 19 years. What else is she going to do at this point?
Right. I mean,
the Babington plot is very vague to me. It's just very vague. I don't believe she was as tied to it as they like to make you believe.
And I think what's important here, especially touching on this, is we have to remember this wasn't just I think I kind of said it earlier, but it wasn't just Mary and Elizabeth. There was a hell of a lot of other powers at play. There was always people behind the scenes. You know, there was always people doing things in the name of the Queen that the Queen hasn't necessarily signed off. Yes. I do want to, you know, we're kind of getting towards the end and we will come back to Mary. You know, I wanted today to kind of talk about Mary's younger life and, you know, the things that might have affected her to get her to the place where she was. But I do, one interesting thing that I do want to discuss with you two is, what do you think of the idea that Elizabeth accidentally signed the death warrant? Are we all kind of completely on the...
I don't think that Elizabeth accidentally did anything. I think she may have done it so that she could have, what is it called, plausible it's escaping me, Kathy, you know what I'm saying, like, yeah. She could say plausibly that she didn't know it was actually going to happen. I think she indirectly did want it to happen, because I think in the end Elizabeth was paranoid and had to protect her throne. And, you know, we don't know what Elizabeth was being told too. From one side, we can look at this Babington plot and see it as very vague and very set up, as far as I'm concerned, by Walsingham, but we don't know what she was being told, and everything she was being told could have been very heavily manipulated by those very people that set it up. So that's my take on it. I think she did do it. I don't think Elizabeth ever made a mistake and unknowingly did anything, but I think she did it with, I think she did it with enough that she could go, well, and there's even, I think on the signature of the death warrant, you can see where her pen hesitates and there's a blob of ink. So it was almost, yes, she was probably, I'm sure she didn't want to do this. Her mother was an anointed queen and was murdered. I'm sure she didn't want to go about this the way that it did, but she also had to protect her throne.
I think she meant to do it as well.
Yeah.
I'd like to say that she didn't, but I mean, we've talked about the cold-blooded nature of the Tudors. And I think that we would be remiss if we tried to dismiss it. Henry Tudor had no problem killing Anne Boleyn or Catherine Howard. Elizabeth Tudor had no problem. Mary Tudor killed Jane Grey. Elizabeth Tudor killed any number of people. And we've talked about she might as well have killed Catherine Grey and Mary Grey. I mean, this is a history and a pattern of eliminating your rivals or eliminating people who make you uncomfortable or you're concerned about.
I think their thought process, and again, as I think we say at every podcast, we can't think of it from 2019. We have to think about it in the 1500s. And to them, this was safeguarding their kingdom, their throne. They did what they had to do, and that's how they dealt with it that day. I did what I had to do. Do I think it brought her joy? I don't think she cared one way or the other. I really don't. I think the idea of killing an anointed queen, no matter who that queen would have been, I think would have hurt her just simply because of her connection. But she had to do what she had to do.
See, I disagree with you. I mean, this is really more for a sense I get of the woman rather than anything that's written down in history. And I do kind of try and get a feel for these people rather than just, you know, what comes off of a page. I think she would have felt greatly about it. I don't think it would have been something that, I think it would have really hurt her actually to have to sign that. I think she could have signed Mary's death warrant 19 years earlier and she didn't. I think her hand was forced. And I just don't get the sense that she necessarily enjoyed sending anyone to their death.
I don't think she did either.
Yeah, I don't think she reveled in it, but I think that she also, I think if the quote unquote evidence had come to light 19 years ago, I think that she would have done it then. I think that she was looking for something that could justify the killing of a queen.
Yeah, I don't think that she had, that it was easy for her to live with it. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I agree.
I think if you're asking me if she had feelings about it, that's different from did she sign it with conviction. because I think that there are many things that monarchs are torn by, a sense of duty and also an emotional thing. And I really do believe that Elizabeth fully believed inside herself that Mary had to die. That if she didn't, I mean, now, you know, there's another thing we need to plays a part in this. The Babington plot was not the first one.
No,
this was an ongoing pattern. Okay. Now, whether or not Mary Stuart was actively involved in any of these remains to be seen. But from Elizabeth's standpoint, it's like one a year. You know, after a while, you know, and you've got your Privy Council who have done a lot for you.
Mm-hmm. And you don't know what that Privy Council is reporting back.
Right. And so at this point, you know,
they had enough to push her at that point.
Yeah. I think she made the decision. I think it was a stone cold intellectual decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think she allowed emotion to come into it. Do I think that she dealt with that in her dying days? I do.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I do. I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you on that.
Well,
she knew she was dying, so and that gives you a lot of time to look back on the regrets in your life.
Yeah.
Getting back to Mary, somehow we always come to Elizabeth and Anne, you know, it always kind of circles back to them.
Yeah, it always does. Yeah. Such
players in this time. But like I said, you know, I just really wanted to kind of talk a few, you know, sort of highlight, you know, Mary did have a really hard time of it. And I think people need to look at, okay, you know, like I've said, she was very young. She was 6 days mm-hmm. old when she became queen. Again, away from Scotland from 5 years old, lost the man who had been a hugely close companion to her at 18 years old, to come back to a country that,
her homeland, that wasn't even her homeland anymore, you know. Yeah.
And then things spiraled again from there. So I think, like I said with Anne, I really do hope people can just look on Mary with a bit of a kinder heart and not just look at the last 19, 20 years of her life.
No, and don't look at just the surface. I mean, really look, these were real people who existed. And if you go through your daily life and, you know, you're in a good mood, bad mood, this irritated you, guess what? They went through the same stuff. So put yourself
in. And we're not even being asked to execute anybody.
Yeah, we're not. I mean, we're being asked to cook dinner tonight. I mean,
we don't have anyone following us around with a quill either.
You know? Exactly. Oh, God, can you imagine that?
Stupid thing I say.
Oh my God! You know, like when I'm talking to myself, and they'd be jotting it down. I'd be like, no.
You know, it's like every time they couldn't have bad relationships back then, and when they did, it was disastrous.
Oh God! Yeah.
Let's wrap it
up. But we will. We'll touch upon Mary now that we've got her early life. We'll definitely come back and
come back to Mary. And I think I'll want to come back to her. I'm in the early stages of the book, and I very much wanted to talk about that young Mary. And I think later on we will come back to the slightly older Mary. Yeah, do you want to tell us about what we're going to be doing next week?
Yes. So this kind of hit me today. Because I believe last week or the week before was the anniversary of young Catherine Howard being sent to Sion Abbey after being quote unquote caught up in an affair with Thomas Culpepper. Her past life comes into light. And after seeing a lot of discussion about how people felt, I saw a lot of people kind of bashing her, a lot of people bashing Culpepper. Which, if you watch The Tudors, Torrance Coombs is a very good-looking man, so do not bash him. But, you know, I think it needs to be...
bash the brain, so that's quite brilliant of you, Amy, and you haven't even seen it.
Oh, my goodness. So I just thought it would be interesting to talk about her history. And again, once again, we're talking about a woman who's surrounded by men who could have manipulated the situation. And I'd like to bring it back around to the here and now, when we hear, unfortunately, about rapes, sexual harassment to anyone, we tend to immediately to go to the victim. So I'm going to kind of investigate that a little bit. And I think we're all going to have a theory as to the affair with Culpepper, or was there not an affair? So, and if anyone wants to comment on our page as to what you think, we'd be very interested in hearing your side. But again, take a look at Kath and remember, she was 16, 17 years old, young girl, married to an almost 50-year-old man. So I think it'll be interesting.
Okay. Yeah. So. Keep an eye out for book announcements.
Yeah, Holly, congratulations. That's awesome. And hey, we want to thank, we've had an implode of followers on Instagram, Facebook. We really appreciate all the following. We're up to almost 500, I think, at this point, which is very big deal to us. So thank you all very, very much. We're going to, I'm going to be working on some Patreons to get people on board if they would like to start subscribing. But what will really help us out, if you listen to our podcast, please take 2 minutes and give us a 5-star review. If you're not feeling that perfect, you can give us a 4-1. That's fine. We're totally okay with that. Henry Cavill, you want to back us? Go for it. Let's do it. But thank you to everyone who has jumped on. We really appreciate it. You guys are what makes the podcast, and we would love to hear from you all.
All right.
So, ooh, and happy Thanksgiving, right, guys?
Oh, yeah.
Woo. Yeah, this week. Yeah,
happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Go
in
into
America.
A turkey coma. yeah, exactly.
The traitors are now going to celebrate leaving England.
Yeah. We are the traitors.
Oh, I'm absolutely astounded by that.
Well,
too.
Then we took the land from someone else. We're just jerks over here. So.
Just send me some turkey.
We'll send you some turkey and some pumpkin pie.
Thank you.
All right, everyone. So this should be up tomorrow. Take a listen to it. Give us your thoughts. And we'll be back next week with some Catherine Howard. Holly, you're awesome. Kathy, good to see your face. You guys have want to say bye, or are we all good? And we'll see you next week.
Bye, guys.
All right. Bye, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving. Ultimate murder.